that she chose Lord Littlefinger, and entrusted her son to his care.
He was John Aaron's son as well, cousin, Brunsjon said, frowning at the keeper. He belongs to the Vale.
Peter feigned puzzlement. The Eyrie is as much a part of the Vale as Runestone, unless someone has moved it.
Ah, cheap all you like, Littlefinger, Lord Belmore blustered. The boy shall come with us.
I am loath to disappoint you, Lord Belmore, but my stepson will be remaining here with me. He's not a robust child, as all of you well know. The journey would tax him sorely. As his stepfather and Lord Protector, I cannot permit it.
Simon Templeton cleared his throat and said,
Each of us has 1,000 men at the foot of this mountain, Littlefinger. What a splendid place for them. If need be, we can summon many more.
Are you threatening me with war, sir? Peter did not sound the least afraid. Brunsjon said,
We shall have Lord Robert.
For a moment it seemed as though they had come to an impasse, until Lynn Corbury turned from the fire. All this talk makes me ill. Littlefinger will talk you out of your small clothes if you listen long enough. The only way to settle his sort is with steel.
He drew his longsword. Peter spread his hands.
I wear no sword, sir.
Easily remedied.
Candlelight rippled along the smoke-grey steel of Corbury's blade, so dark that it put Sansa in mind of ice, her father's greatsword.
Your apple-eater holds a blade. Tell him to give it to you.
Or draw that dagger.
She saw Lothar Brune reach for his own sword, but before the blades could meet, Brunsjon rose in wrath.
Put up your steel, sir. Are you a Corbury or a Frey? We are guests here.
Lady Waynewood pursed her lips and said, This is unseemly. Sheathe your sword, Corbury.
Young Lord Hunter echoed, You shame us all with this.
Come, Lynn, chided Redfort in a softer tone. This will serve for naught. Put Lady Forlorn to bed.
My lady has a thirst, Sir Lynn insisted. Whenever she comes out to dance, she likes a drop of red. Your lady must go thirsty.
Brunsjon put himself squarely in Corbury's path.
Oh, the Lord's declarant, Lynn Corby snorted. You should have named yourself the Six Old Women.
He slid the dark sword back into a scabbard and left them, shouldering Brune aside as if he were not there. Elaine listened to his footsteps recede.
Anya Waynewood and Horton Redford exchanged a look.
Hunter drained his wine cup and held it out to be refilled.
Lord Baelish, Sir Simon said, you must forgive us that display.
Must I? Littlefinger's voice had grown cold.
You brought him here, my lords.
Brunsjon said,
It was never our intent. You brought him here. I would be well within my rights to call my guards and have all of you arrested.
Hunter lurched to his feet so wildly that he almost knocked the flagon out of Elaine's hands.
You gave us safe conduct.
Yes. Be grateful that I have more honour than some.
Peter sounded as angry as she'd ever heard him.
I have read your declaration and heard your demands. Now hear mine. Remove your armies from this mountain. Go home and leave my son in peace. Misrule there has been. I will not deny it. But that was Lysa's work, not mine. Grant me but a year, and with Lord Nestor's help, I promise that none of you shall have any cause for grievance.
So you see, said Belmore.
Yet how shall we trust you? You dare call me untrustworthy. It was not me who bared steel at a parley. You're right of defending Lord Robert, even as you deny him food. That must end. I'm no warrior, but I will fight you if you do not lift the siege. There are other lords besides you in the Vale, and King's Landing will send men as well. If it is war you want, say so now, and the Vale will bleed.
Elaine could see the doubt blooming in the eyes of the Lord's declarant.
A year is not so long a time, Lord Redford said uncertainly. Mayhaps if you gave assurances.
None of us wants war, acknowledged Lady Waynewood. Autumn wanes, and we must gird ourselves for winter.
Belmore cleared his throat.
At the end of this year, if I have not set the veil to rights, I shall willingly step down as Lord Protector.
Peter promised them.
I call that more than fair,
Lord Nestor Royce put in.
There must be no reprisals, insisted Templeton. No talk of treason or rebellion. You must swear to that as well.
Gladly, said Peter. It is friends I want, not foes. I shall pardon all of you, in writing if you wish. Even Lind Corbury. His brother is a good man. There's no need to bring down shame upon a noble house.
Lady Waynewood turned to her fellow lords declarant.
My lords, perhaps we might confer.
There is no need. It's plain that he has won.
Bronzion's grey eyes considered Peter Baelish.
I like it not, but it would seem you have your year. Best use it well, my lord. Not all of us are fooled.
He opened the door so forcefully that he all but wrenched it off its hinges. Later there was a feast of sorts, though Peter was forced to make apologies for the humble fare. Robert was trotted out in a doublet of cream and blue and played the little lord quite graciously. Bronzjohn was not there to see. He had already departed from the Eyrie to begin the long descent, as had Sir Lynn Corbury before him. The other lords remained with him till morn.
He bewitched them,
Elaine thought, as she lay abed that night, listening to the wind howl outside her windows. She could not have said where the suspicion came from, but once it crossed her mind, it would not let her sleep. She tossed and turned, worrying at it like a dog at some old bone. Finally she rose and dressed herself, leaving Gretchel to her dreams. Peter was still awake, scratching out a letter.
"Elaine," he said, "my sweet, what brings you here so late?"
I had to know. What will happen in a year? He put down his quill.
Redfort and Waynewood are old. One or both of them may die. Gilwood Hunter will be murdered by his brothers, most likely by young Harlan, who arranged Lord Ian's death. In for a penny, in for a stag, I always say. Belmore is corrupt and can be bought. Templeton I shall befriend. Bronzjohn Royce will continue to be hostile, I fear, but so long as he stands alone, he is not so much a threat.
And Sir Lynn Corbury? The candlelight was dancing in his eyes.
Sir Lynn will remain my implacable enemy. He will speak of me with scorn and loathing to every man he meets, and lend his sword to every secret plot to bring me down.
That was when her suspicion turned to certainty. And how shall you reward him for this service? Littlefinger laughed aloud.
With gold, and boys, and promises, of course. Sir Lynn is a man of simple taste, my sweetling. All he likes is gold, and boys, and killing.
Cersei. The king was pouting.
I want to sit on the Iron Throne, he told her. You always let Joff sit up there.
But Joff was 12.
But I'm the king. The throne belongs to me.
Oh, who told you that? Cersei took a deep breath, so Dorcas could lace her up more tightly. She was a big girl, much stronger than Sunil, though clumsier as well. Tommen's face turned red.
No one told me.
No one? Is that what you call your lady wife? The queen could smell Marjorie Tyrell all over this rebellion. If you lie to me, I will have no choice but to send for Pate and have him beaten till he bleeds. Pate was Tommen's whipping boy, as he had been Geoffrey's. Is that what you want?
No,
the king muttered sullenly. Who told you? He shuffled his feet.
Lady Marjorie.
He knew better than to call her Queen in his mother's hearing.
That is better, Tommen. I have grave matters to decide, matters that you are far too young to understand. I do not need a silly little boy fidgeting on the throne behind me and distracting me with childish questions. I suppose Marjorie thinks you ought to be at my council meetings, too.
Yes,
he admitted.
She says I have to learn to be king.
When you are older, you can attend as many councils as you wish, Cersei told him. I promise you, you will soon grow sick of them.
Robert used to doze through the sessions. When he troubled to attend at all, he preferred to hunt and hawk and leave the tedium to old Lord Arryn. Do you remember him?
He died of a bellyache.
So he did, poor man.
As you are so eager to learn, perhaps you should learn the names of all the kings of Westeros, and the hands who serve them. You may recite them to me on the morrow.
Yes, mother,
he said meekly.
That's my good boy.
The rule was hers. Cersei did not mean to give it up until Tommen came of age.
I waited. So can he. I waited half my life.
She had played the dutiful daughter, the blushing bride, the pliant wife. She had suffered Robert's drunken groping, Jamie's jealousy, Renly's mockery, Varys with his titters, Stannis endlessly grinding his teeth. She had contended with John Arryn, Ned Stark, and her vile, treacherous, murderous dwarf brother, all the while promising herself that one day it would be her turn.
If Marjorie Tyrell thinks to cheat me of my hour in the sun, she had bloody well think again.
Still, it was an ill way to break her fast, and Cersei's day did not soon improve. She spent the rest of the morning with Lord Giles and his ledger books, listening to him cough about stars and stags and dragons. After him, Lord Waters arrived to report that the first three Drummonds were near completion, and beg for more gold to finish them in the splendour they deserved. The Queen was pleased to grant him his request. Moonboy capered as she took her midday meal with members of the merchant guilds and listened to them complain about sparrows wandering the streets and sleeping in the squares.
I may need to use the gold cloaks to chase these sparrows from the city, she was thinking, when Pycelle intruded. The Grand Maester had been especially querulous in council of late. At the last session he had complained bitterly about the men that Oran Waters had chosen to captain her new Drummonds. Waters meant to give the ships to younger men, whilst Pycelle argued for experience, insisting that the command should go to those captains who had survived the fires of the Blackwater. "Seasoned men of proven loyalty," he called them. Cersei called them old, and sided with Lord Waters. "The only thing these captains proved was that they know how to swim," she'd said. "No mother should outlive her children, and no captain should outlive his ship." Pycelle had taken the rebuke with ill grace. He seemed less choleric today, and even managed a sort of tremulous smile.
"Your Grace, glad tidings," he announced. "Wyman Manderley has done as you commanded, and beheaded Lord Stannis's Onion Knight."
"We know this for a certainty?"
"The man's head and hands have been mounted above the walls of White Harbour. Lord Wyman avows this, and the phrase confirmed. They have seen the head there with an onion in its mouth, and the hands one marked by his shortened fingers."
"Very good," said Cersei. "Send a bird to Manderley and inform him that his son will be returned forthwith, now that he has demonstrated his loyalty." White Harbour would soon return to the King's peace, and Roose Bolton and his bastard son were closing in on Moat Caelan, from south and north. Once the moat was theirs, they would join their strength and clear the ironmen out of Torren Square and Deepwood Mott as well. That should win them the allegiance of Ned Stark's remaining bannermen when the time came to march against Lord Stannis. To the south, meanwhile, Mace Tyrell had raised a city of tents outside Storm's End, and had 2 dozen mangonels flinging stones against the castle's massive walls. Thus far, to small effect. Lord Tyrell the Warrior, the Queen mused. His sigil ought to be a fat man sitting on his arse. That afternoon, the Dour Bravassi envoy turned up for his audience. Cersei had put him off for a fortnight, and would have gladly put him off another year. But Lord Giles claimed he could no longer deal with the man, though the Queen was starting to wonder if Giles was capable of doing anything but coughing. Noho Demetus, the Bravassi named himself. An irritating name for an irritating man. His voice was irritating, too. Cersei shifted in her seat as he went on, wondering how long she must endure his hectoring. Behind her loomed the Iron Throne, its barbs and blades throwing twisted shadows across the floor. Only the king or his hand could sit upon the throne itself. Cersei sat by its foot, in a seat of gilded wood piled with crimson cushions. When the Bravassi paused for breath, she saw her chance. "This is more properly a matter for our Lord Treasurer." That answer did not please a noble Noho, it would seem.
"I have spoken with Lord Giles of 6 times. He coughs at me and makes excuses, Your Grace. But the gold is not forthcoming."
"Speak to him 7th time, Cersei suggested pleasantly. "The number 7 is sacred to our gods."
"It pleases Your Grace to make a jest, eh? I see."
"When I make a jest, I smile. Do you see me smiling? Do you hear laughter? I assure you, when I make a jest, men laugh."
"King Robert is dead,"
she said sharply. "The Iron Bank will have its gold when this rebellion has been put down." He had the insolence to scowl at her.
"Your Grace!
This audience is at an end." Cersei had suffered quite enough for one day. "Sir Meryn, show this noble Noho Demetus to the door. Sir Osmond, you may escort me back to my apartments." Her guests would soon arrive, and she had to bathe and change. Supper promised to be a tedious affair as well. It was hard work to rule a kingdom, much less 7 of them. Sir Osmond Kettleback fell in beside her on the steps, tall and lean, in his Kingsguard whites. When Cersei was certain they were quite alone, she slid her arm through his. "How is your little brother faring, pray?" Sir Osmond looked uneasy.
Well, enough, only,
"Only?" The Queen let a hint of anger edge her words. "I must confess I'm running short of patience with dear Osney. It is past time he broke in that little filly. I named him Tommen Swornshield, so he could spend part of every day in Marjorie's company. He should have plucked the rose by now. Is the little queen blind to his charms?"
"Oh, his charms is fine. He's a Kettleblack, ain't he?"
Begging your pardon?" Sir Osmond ran his fingers through his oily black hair.
"It's her that's a trouble."
"And why is that?" The Queen had begun to nurse doubts about Sir Osney. Perhaps another man would have been more to Marjorie's liking. Orrane Waters with that silvery hair, or a big strapping fellow like Sir Tallard. "Would the maid prefer someone else? Does your brother's face displease her?"
"Oh, she likes his face. She touched his scars 2 days ago, he told me. 'What woman gave you these?' she asked. Osney never said it was a woman, but she knew. Might be someone told her. She's always touching him when they talk, he says, straightening the clasp on his cloak, brushing back his hair, and like that. One time, at the archery butt, she had him show her how to hold a longbow, so he had to put his arms around her. Osney tells her bawdy jests, and she laughs and comes back with ones that are even bawdier. Oh, she wants him, that's plain, but—"
"But," Cersei prompted.
"They are never alone. The king's with them most all the time. And when he's not, there's someone else. 2 of her ladies share her bed. Different ones every night. 2 others bring her breakfast and help her dress. She prays with her scepter, reads with her cousin Eleanor, sings with her cousin Alla, sews with her cousin Megger. When she's not off hawking with Janner Fussaway and Mary Crane, she's playing Come Into My Castle with that little Bulwer girl. She never goes riding, but she takes a tail. 4 or 5 companions and 12 guards at least, and there's always men about her, even in the maiden vault.
Men? That was something. That had possibilities. What men are these, pray tell?
Sir Osmond shrugged. Singers. She's a fool for singers and jugglers and such. Knights come round to moon over her cousins. Sir Talad's the worst, Osney says. That big oaf don't seem to know if it's Eleanor or Arla he wants, but he knows he wants her awful bad. The Redwind twins come calling, too. Slubber brings flowers and fruit, and Horror's taken up the loot. To hear Osney tell it, you can make a sweeter sound strangling a cat. The Summer Islanders always underfoot as well.
Jalamazo, Cersei gave a derisive snort. Begging her for gold and swords to win his homeland back, most like. Beneath his jewels and feathers, Zoe was little more than a well-born beggar. Robert could have put an end to his importuning for good with one firm no, but the notion of conquering the Summer Isles had appealed to her drunken lout of a husband. No doubt he dreamed of brown-skinned wenches naked beneath feathered cloaks with nipples black as coal. So instead of no, Robert always told Zoe next year, though somehow next year never came.
"Why, you couldn't say if he was begging, Your Grace," Sir Osmond answered. "Osney says he's teaching them the summer tongue, not Osney, the filly and her cousins."
"A horse that speaks the summer tongue would make a great sensation," the Queen said dryly. "Tell your brother to keep his spurs well honed. I shall find some way for him to mount his filly soon. He may rely on that."
"I'll tell him, Your Grace. He's eager for that roid. Don't think he ain't. Oh, she's a pretty little thing, that filly."
"It is me he's eager for, fool," the Queen thought. "All he wants of Marjorie is the lordship between her legs." As fond as she was of Osmond, at times he seemed as slow as Robert. "I hope his sword is quicker than his wits. The day may come that Tommen has some need of it." They were crossing beneath the shadow of the broken Tower of the Hand, when the sound of cheers swept over them. Across the yard some squire had made a pass at the quintain and sent the cross-arm spinning. The cheers were being led by Marjorie Tyrell and her hens. A lot of uproar for very little. You would think the boy had won a tourney. Then she was startled to see that it was Tommen on the courser, clad all in gilded plate. The Queen had little choice but to don a smile and go to see her son. She reached him as the Knight of Flowers was helping him from his horse. The boy was breathless with excitement.
"Did you see?" he was asking everyone. "I did it just the way Sir Loras said. Did you see, Sir Osney?"
"I did," said Osney Kettleblack. "A pretty sight."
"You have a better seat than me, sire," put in Sir Dermot.
"I broke the lance too, Sir Loras. Did you hear it?"
"As loud as a crack of thunder."
A rose of jade and gold clasped Sir Loras's white cloak at the shoulder, and the wind was riffling artfully through his brown locks.
"You rode a splendid course, but once is not enough. You must do it again upon the morrow. You must ride every day, until every blow lands true and straight, and your lance is as much a part of you as your arm."
"I want to." "You were glorious."
Marjorie went to one knee, kissed the king upon his cheek, and put an arm around him.
"Brother, take care," she warned Loras. "My gallant husband will be unhorsing you in a few more years, I think."
Her three cousins all agreed, and the wretched little Bulwer girl began to hop about, chanting, "Tommen will be the champion, the champion, the champion." "When he is a man grown," said Cersei. Their smiles withered like roses kissed by frost. The puck-faced old scepter was the first to bend her knee. The rest followed, save for the little queen and her brother. Tommen did not seem to notice the sudden chill in the air.
"Mother, did you see me?" he burbled happily. "I broke my lance on the shield, and the bag never hit me."
"I was watching you from across the yard. You did very well, Tommen. I would expect no less of you. Justing is in your blood. One day you shall rule the lists as your father did."
"No man will stand before him."
Marjorie Tyrell gave the queen a coy smile.
"But I never knew that King Robert was so accomplished at the jousts. Pray tell us, Your Grace, what tourneys did he win? What great knights did he unseat? I know the king should like to hear about his father's victories."
A flush crept up Cersei's neck. The girl had caught her out. Robert Baratheon had been an indifferent jouster, in truth. During tourneys he had much preferred the melee, where he could beat men bloody with blunted axe or hammer. It had been Jaime she had been thinking of when she spoke. "It's not like me to forget myself." "Robert won the tourney of the Trident," she had to say. "He overthrew Prince Rhaegar and named me his queen of love and beauty. I'm surprised you do not know that story, good daughter." She gave Marjorie no time to frame a reply. "Sir Osmond helped my son from his armour, if you would be so good. Sir Loras, walk with me. I need a word with you." The Knight of Flowers had no recourse but to follow at her heels, like the puppy he was. Cersei waited until they were on the Serpentine steps before she said, "Whose notion was that, pray?"
"My sister's," he admitted.
"Sir Tallard, Sir Dermot, and Sir Portifer were riding at the Quintain, and the Queen suggested that His Grace might like to have a turn. He calls her that to irk me." "And your part?" "I helped His Grace to don his armour and showed him how to couch his lance," he answered. "The horse was much too large for him. What if he had fallen off? What if the sandbag had smashed his head in? Bruises and bloody lips are all part of being a knight. I begin to understand why your brother is a cripple." That wiped the smile off his pretty face, she was pleased to see. "Perhaps my brother failed to explain your duties to you, sir. You are here to protect my son from his enemies. Training him for knighthood is the province of the Master at Arms. The Red Keep has had no Master at Arms since Aaron Santigar was slain," Sir Loras said, with a hint of reproach in his voice. "His Grace is almost 9 and eager to learn. At his age, he should be a squire. Someone has to teach him."
"Someone will, but it will not be you."
"Pray, who did you squire for, sir?" she asked sweetly. "Lord Rendley, was it not? I had that honour."
"Yes, I thought as much."
Cersei had seen how tight the bonds grew between squires and the knights they served. She did not want Tommen growing close to Loras Tyrell. The Knight of Flowers was no sort of man for any boy to emulate. "I have been remiss. With a realm to rule, a war to fight, and a father to mourn, somehow I overlooked the crucial matter of naming a new master at arms. I shall rectify that error at once." Sir Loras pushed back a brown curl that had fallen across his forehead. "Your Grace will not find any man half so skilled with sword and lance as I."
"Oh, humble, aren't we? Tommen is your king, not your squire. You are to fight for him and die for him if need be. No more."
She left him on the drawbridge that spanned the dry moat with its bed of iron spikes, and entered Maegar's Holdfast alone. "Where am I to find a master at arms?" she wondered as she climbed to her apartments. Having refused Sir Loras, she dare not turn to any of the Kingsguard's knights. That would be salt in the wound, certainly to anger Highgarden. "Sir Tannard? Sir Dermot? There must be someone." Tommen was growing fond of his new sworn shield. But Osnir was proving himself less capable than she had hoped in the matter of Maid Marjorie, and she had a different office in mind for his brother Osfrid. It was rather a pity that the hound had gone rabid. Tommen had always been frightened of Sandor Clegane's harsh voice and burned face. and Clegane's scorn would have been the perfect antidote to Loras Tyrell's simpering chivalry.
Aron Sentikar was Dornish, Cersei recalled. I could send to Dorne.
Centuries of blood and war lay between Sunspear and Highgarden.
Yes, a Dornishman might suit my needs admirably. There must be some good swords in Dorne.
When she entered her solar, Cersei found Lord Qyburn reading in a window seat.
If it please your grace, I have reports.
More plots and treasons? Cersei asked. I've had a long and tiring day. Tell me quickly. He smiled sympathetically.
As you wish. There is talk that the Archon of Tyrosh has offered terms to Lys to end their present trade war. It had been rumored that Myr was about to enter the war on the Tyroshi side, but without the Golden Company, the Myrish did not believe they...
What the Myrish believe does not concern me. The free cities were always fighting one another. Their endless betrayals and alliances meant little and less to Westeros. Do you have any news or more import?
The slave revolt in Astapor has spread to Meereen, it would seem. Sailors off a dozen ships speak of dragons.
Harpies. It is harpies in Meereen. She remembered that from somewhere. Meereen was at the far end of the world, out east beyond Valyria. Let the slaves revolt. Why should I care? We keep no slaves in Westeros. Is that all you have for me?
There is some news from Dorne that your grace may find of more interest. Prince Doran has imprisoned Sir Daemon Sand, a bastard who once squired for the Red Viper.
I recall him. Sir Daemon had been amongst the Dornish knights who had accompanied Prince Oberon to King's Landing. What did he do?
He demanded that Prince Oberon's daughters be set free.
More fool him.
Also,
Lord Qyburn said,
the daughter of the Knight of Spotswood was betrothed, quite unexpectedly, to Lord Eastermont. Our friends in Dorne inform us. She was sent to Greenstone that very night, and it is said she and Eastermont have already wed.
Well, a bastard in the belly would explain that. Cersei toyed with a lock of her hair. How old is the blushing bride?
23, Your Grace. Whereas Lord Eastermont must be 70, I am aware of that.
The Eastermonts were her good kin through Robert, whose father had taken one of them to wife in what must have been a fit of lust or madness. By the time Cersei wed the king, Robert's lady mother was long dead, though both of her brothers had turned up for the wedding and stayed for half a year. Robert had later insisted on returning the courtesy with a visit to Eastermont, a mountainous little island off Cape Wrath. The dank and dismal fortnight Cersei spent at Greenstone, the seat of House Estermont, was the longest of her young life. Jaime dubbed the castle Greenshit at first sight, and soon had Cersei doing it too. Elsewise, she passed her days watching her royal husband hawk, hunt, and drink with his uncles, and bludgeon various male cousins senseless in Greenshit's yard. There had been a female cousin, too, a chunky little widow with breasts as big as melons, whose husband and father had both died at Storm's End during the siege.
Her father was good to me, Robert told her, and she and I would play together when the two of us were small.
It did not take him long to start playing with her again. As soon as Cersei closed her eyes, the king would steal off to console the poor, lonely creature. One night she had Jaime follow him, to confirm her suspicions. When her brother returned, he asked her if she wanted Robert dead. No, she had replied. I want him horned. She liked to think that that was the night Joffrey was conceived. Eldon Estermont has taken a wife 50 years his junior, she said to Qyburn. Why should that concern me? He shrugged.
I do not say it should. But Daemon Sand and the Santigar girl were both close to Prince Doran's own daughter, Arianne. Or so the Dornishman would have us believe. Perhaps it means little or less. But I thought your grace should know.
Now I do. She was losing patience. You have more?
One more thing, a trifling matter.
He gave her an apologetic smile, and told her of a puppet show that had recently become popular amongst the city's small folk. A puppet show wherein the kingdom of the beasts was ruled by a pride of haughty lions.
The puppet lions grow greedy and arrogant as this treasonous tale proceeds, until they begin to devour their own subjects. When the noble stag makes objection, the lions devour him as well, and roar that it is their right as the mightiest of beasts.
And is that the end of it? Cersei asked, amused. Looked at in the right light, it could be seen as a salutary lesson.
No, Your Grace. At the end, a dragon hatches from an egg and devours all the lions.
The ending took the puppet show from simple insolence to treason. Witless fools. Only cretins would hazard their heads upon a wooden dragon. She considered a moment. Send some of your whisperers to these shows and make note of who attends. If any of them should be men of note, I would know their names.
What will be done with them, if I may be so bold?
Any men of substance shall be fined. Half their worth should be sufficient to teach them a sharp lesson and refill our coffers, without quite ruining them. Those too poor to pay can lose an eye for watching treason. For the puppeteers, the axe.
There are four. Perhaps Your Grace might allow me two of them for mine own purposes. A woman would be especially...
I gave you Sanel, the Queen said sharply.
Alas, the poor girl is quite, exhausted.
Cersei did not like to think about that. The girl had come with her unsuspecting, thinking she was along to serve and pour. Even when Qyburn clapped the chain around her wrist, she had not seemed to understand. The memory still made the Queen queasy. The cells were bitter cold, even the torches shivered, and that foul thing screaming in the darkness. Yes, you may take a woman, two, if it please you, but first I will have names.
As you command,
Qyburn withdrew. Outside the sun was setting. Dorcas had prepared a bath for her. The Queen was soaking pleasantly in the warm water and contemplating what she would say to her supper guests when Jamie came bursting through the door and ordered Jocelyn and Dorcas from the room. Her brother looked rather less than immaculate, and had a smell of horse about him. He had Tommen with him, too. "Sweet sister," he said, "the King requires a word." Cersei's golden tresses floated in the bathwater. The room was steamy. A drop of sweat trickled down her cheek. "Tommen," she said, in a dangerously soft voice, "what is it now?" The boy knew that tone. He shrank back. "His Grace wants his white courser on the morrow," Jamie said, "for his jousting lesson." She sat up in the tub. "There will be no jousting."
"Yes, there will,"
Tommen puffed out his lower lip.
"I have to ride every day."
"And you shall," the Queen declared, "once we have a proper master-at-arms to supervise your training."
"I don't want a proper master-at-arms. I want Sir Loras."
"You make too much of that boy. Your little wife has filled your head with foolish notions of his prowess."
"I know, but Sir Osmond Kettleblack is thrice the knight that Loras is."
Jamie laughed. "Not the Osmond Kettleblack I know." She could have throttled him. "Perhaps I need to command Sir Loras to allow Sir Osmond to unhorse him. That might chase the stars from Tommen's eyes. Salt a slug and shame a hero, and they shrink right up." "I'm sending for a Dornishman to train you," she said. "The Dornish are the finest jousters in the realm."
"They are not," said Tommen. "Anyway, I don't want any stupid Dornishman. I want Sir Loras. I command it."
Jamie laughed. "He is no help at all. Does he think this amusing?" The Queen slapped the water angrily. "Must I send for Pate? You do not command me. I am your mother."
"Yes, but I'm the King. Marjorie says that everyone has to do what the King says. I want my white courser saddled on the morrow so Sir Loras can teach me how to joust. I want a kitten, too. And I don't want to eat beets."
He crossed his arms. Jamie was still laughing. The Queen ignored him. "Tommen, come here." When he hung back, she sighed. "Are you afraid? A king should not show fear." The boy approached the tub, his eyes downcast. She reached out and stroked his golden curls. "King or no, you are a little boy. Until you come of age, the rule is mine. You will learn to joust, I promise you, but not from Loras. The knights of the King's Guard have more important duties than playing with a child. Ask the Lord Commander. Isn't that so, sir?" "Very important duties," Jamie smiled thinly. "Riding round the city walls, for an instance." Tommen looked close to tears.
"Can I still have a kitten?"
"Perhaps," the Queen allowed. "So long as I hear no more nonsense about jousting. Can you promise me that?" He shuffled his feet.
"Yes."
"Good. Now run along. My guests will be here shortly." Tommen ran along, but before he left, he turned back to say,
"When I'm king, in my own right, I'm going to outlaw beets."
Her brother shoved the door shut with his stump. "Your Grace," he said, when he and Cersei were alone, "I was wondering, are you drunk or merely stupid?" She slapped the water once again, sending up another splash to wash across his feet.
"Guard your tongue, or what?
Will you send me to inspect the city walls again?" He sat and crossed his legs.
"Your bloody walls are fine. I've crawled over every inch of them and had a look at all 7 of the gates.
The hinges on the iron gate are rusted, and the King's Gate and Mud Gate need to be replaced after the pounding Stannis gave them with his rams. The walls are as strong as they have ever been, but perchance your Grace has forgotten that our friends of Highgarden are inside the walls." "I forget nothing," she told him, thinking of a certain gold coin, with a hand on one face and the head of a forgotten king on the other. "How did some miserable wretch of a jailer come to have such a coin hidden beneath his chamber pot? How does a man like Rugen come to have old gold from Highgarden? This is the first I've heard of a new master-at-arms. You'll need to look long and hard to find a better jouster than Loras Tyrell. Sir Loras is—" "I know what he is. I won't have him near my son. You had best remind him of his duties." Her bath was growing cool. "He knows his duties, and there's no better lance. You were better before you lost your hand. Sir Barristan, when he was young. Arthur Dane was better, and Prince Rhaegar was a match for even him. Do not prate at me about how fierce the Flower is. He's just a boy." She was tired of Jamie balking her. No one had ever balked her lord father. When Tywin Lannister spoke, men obeyed. When Cersei spoke, they felt free to counsel her, to contradict her, even refuse her. "It's all because I am a woman, because I cannot fight them with a sword. They gave Robert more respect than they give me, and Robert was a witless sot." She would not suffer it, especially not from Jamie. "I need to rid myself of him, and soon." Once upon a time, she had dreamt that the two of them might rule the 7 kingdoms side by side. But Jamie had become more of a hindrance than a help. Cersei rose from the bath. Water ran down her legs and trickled from her hair. "When I want your counsel, I will ask for it. Leave me, sir. I must needs dress." "Your supper guests, I know. What plot is this now?" "There are so many I lose track." His glance fell to the water, beading in the golden hair between her legs. "He still wants me. Pining for what you've lost, brother?" Jamie raised his eyes. "I love you too, sweet sister. But you're a fool. a beautiful, golden fool. The word stung. You called me kinder words at Greenstone, the night you planted Joff inside me, Cersei thought. Get out! She turned her back on him, and listened to him leave, fumbling at the door with his stump. Whilst Jocelyn was making certain that all was in readiness for the supper, Dorcas helped the queen into her new gown. It had stripes of shiny green satin alternating with stripes of plush black velvet, an intricate black mirrorish lace above the bodice. Mirrorish lace was costly, but it was necessary for a queen to look her best at all times, and her wretched washerwomen had shrunk several of her old gowns so they no longer fit. She would have whipped them for their carelessness, but Thena had urged her to be merciful.
"The small folk will love you more if you are kind," she had said.
So Cersei had ordered the value of the gowns deducted from the women's wage, a much more elegant solution. Dorcas put a silver looking-glass into her hand. "Very good," the queen thought, smiling at her reflection. It was pleasant to be out of mourning. Black made her look too pale. "A pity I'm not supping with Lady Merryweather," the queen reflected. It had been a long day, and Tana's wit always cheered her. Cersei had not had a friend she so enjoyed since Melara Heatherspoon, and Melara had turned out to be a greedy little schemer with ideas above her station. "I should not think ill of her. She's dead and drowned, and she taught me never to trust anyone but Jaime." By the time she joined them in the Solar, her guests had made a good start on the Hippocras. "Lady Felice not only looks like a fish, she drinks like one," she reflected, when she had made note of the half-empty flagon. "Sweet Felice," she exclaimed, kissing the woman's cheek, "and brave Sir Belmon, I was so distraught when I heard about your dear, dear mother. How fares our Lady Tander?" Lady Felice looked as if she was about to cry. "Oh, your grace is good to ask. Mother's hip was shattered by the fall, Maester Franklin says. He did what he could. Now we pray, but—" "Pray all you like. She will still be dead before the moon turns." Women as old as Tander Stokeworth do not survive a broken hip. "I shall add my prayers to your own," said Cersei. "Lord Kyburn tells me that Tander was thrown from her horse." "Her saddle girth burst while she was riding," said Sir Balmain Birch. "The stable boy should have seen the strap was worn. He has been chastised." "Severely, I hope." The queen seated herself and indicated that her guest should sit as well. "Will you have another cup of hippocras, Felice? You were always fond of it, I seem to recall."
"It is so good of you to remember, your grace."
How could I have forgotten? Cersei thought. Jamie said it was a wonder you did not piss the stuff.
"How was your journey?"
Uncomfortable, complained Felice. "It rained most of the day. We sought to spend the night at Rosby, but that young ward of Lord Giles refused us hospitality," she sniffed. "Mark my words, when Giles dies, that ill-born wretch will make off with his gold. He may even try and claim the lands and lordships, though by rights Rosby should come to us when Giles passes. My lady mother was aunt to his second wife, third cousin to Giles himself."
"Is your sigil a lamb, my lady, or some sort of grasping monkey?" Cersei thought.
"Lord Giles has been threatening to die for as long as I have known him, but he's still with us, and will be for many years, I do hope." She smiled pleasantly. "No doubt he will cuff the whole lot of us into our graves." "Like as not," Sir Belmon agreed. "Rosby's ward was not the only one to vex us, your grace. We encountered ruffians on the road as well. Filthy, unkempt creatures with leather shields and axes. Some had stars sewn on their jerkins, sacred stars of 7 points, but they had an evil look about them all the same." "They were lice-ridden, I am certain," added Felice.
"They call themselves sparrows," said Cersei. "A plague upon the land."
Our new High Septon will need to deal with them, once he is crowned. If not, I shall deal with them myself.
Has His High Holiness been chosen yet?
Asked Felice. No, the Queen had to confess.
Septon Olidor was on the verge of being chosen until some of these sparrows followed him to a brothel and dragged him naked out into the street. Lucien seemed the likely choice now, though our friends on the other hill say he's still a few votes short of the required number.
May the Crone guide the deliberations with her golden lamp of wisdom, said Lady Felice most piously.
Sir Balmon shifted in his seat.
Your Grace, an awkward matter, but lest bad feeling fester between us, you should know that neither my good wife nor her mother had any hand in the naming of this bastard child. Lollies is a simple creature, and her husband is given to black humours. I told him to choose a more fitting name for the boy. He laughed.
The Queen sipped her wine and studied him. Sir Balmon had been a noted jouster once, and one of the handsomest knights in the Seven Kingdoms. He could still boast a handsome moustache. Elsewise, he had not aged well. His wavy blonde hair had retreated, whilst his belly advanced inexorably against his doublet. As a cat's paw, he leaves much to be desired, she reflected. Still, he should serve. Tyrion was a king's name before the dragons came. The imp has despoiled it, but perhaps this child can restore the name to honour. If the bastard lives so long.
I know you are not to blame. Lady Tanda is a sister that I never had. And you?
Her voice broke.
Forgive me. I live in fear.
Felice opened and closed her mouth, which made her look like some especially stupid fish.
In fear, Your Grace.
I have not slept a whole night through since Joffrey died. Cersei filled the goblets with hippocras. My friends, you are my friends, I hope. And King Tommen's?
Oh, that sweet lad,
Sir Balmon declared.
Your Grace, the very words of House Tokeworth are proud to be faithful.
Would that there were more like you, good sir. I tell you truly, I have grave doubts about Sir Bronn of the Blackwater. Husband and wife exchanged a look.
The man is insolent, Your Grace,
Felice said.
Uncouth and foul-mouthed. He is no true knight,
Sir Balmon said.
No,
Cersei smiled all for him, and you are a man who would know true knighthood. I remember watching you joust in, which tourney was it, where you fought so brilliantly, sir? He smiled modestly.
Oh, that affair, Duskendale, 6 years ago. No, you were not there, else you would surely have been crowned the Queen of Love and Beauty. Was it the tourney at Lannisport after Greyjoy's rebellion? I unhorsed many a good knight in that one.
That was the one. Her face grew somber. The imp vanished the night my father died, leaving two honest jailers behind in pools of blood. Some claim he fled across the narrow sea, but I wonder. The dwarf is cunning. Perhaps he still lurks near, planning more murders. Perhaps some friend is hiding him.
Bronn?
Sir Balmon stroked his bushy moustache. He was ever the imp's creature. Only the stranger knows how many men he sent to hell at Tyrion's behest.
Your Grace, I think I should have noticed the dwarf skulking about our lands,
said Sir Balmon. My brother is small. He was made for skulking. Cersei let her hand shake. A child's name is a small thing, but insolence, unpunished, breeds rebellion. And this man Bronn has been gathering sellswords to him. Kyburn has told me.
He has taken four knights into his household,
said Felice. Sir Balmon snorted.
My good wife flatters them to call them knights. They're up jump sellswords, with not a thimble of chivalry to be found amongst the four of them.
As I feared, Bronn is gathering swords for the dwarf. May the seven save my little son. The imp will kill him as he killed his brother. She sobbed. My friends, I put my honour in your hands. But what is a queen's honour against a mother's fears? Oh, say on, your grace, Sir Balmain assured her. Your word shall ne'er leave this room.
Cersei reached across the table and gave his hand a squeeze.
I would sleep more easily of a night if I were to hear that Sir Bronn had suffered a mishap whilst hunting, perhaps.
Sir Balmain considered for a moment.
A mortal mishap?
No, I desire you to break his little toe. She had to bite her lip. My enemies are everywhere, and my friends are fools.
I beg you, sir,
she whispered. Do not make me say it.
Oh, I understand.
Sir Balmain raised a finger. A turnip would have grasped it quicker.
You are a true knight indeed, sir. The answer to a frightened mother's prayers.
Cersei kissed him.
Do it quickly, if you would. Bronn has only a few men about him now, but if we do not act, he will surely gather more.
She kissed Felice. I shall never forget this, my friends. My true friends of Stokeworth. Proud to be faithful?
You have my word. We shall find Lollis a better husband when this is done.
A kettle black, perhaps.
We Lannisters pay our debts. The rest was hippocras and buttered beets, hot-baked bread, herb-crusted pike, and ribs of wild boar.
Cersei had become very fond of boar since Robert's death. She did not even mind the company, though Felice simpered and Balmain preened from soup to sweet. It was past midnight before she could rid herself of them. Sir Balmain proved a great one for suggesting yet another flagon, and the Queen did not think it prudent to refuse. I could have hired a faceless man to kill Bronn for half of what I spent on hippocras, she reflected when they were gone at last. At that hour her son was fast asleep, but Cersei looked in upon him before seeking her own bed. She was surprised to find three black kittens cuddled up beside him.
Where did those come from?
She asked Sir Meryn Trant outside the royal bedchamber.
The little queen gave them to him. She only meant to give him one, but he couldn't decide which one he liked best.
Better than cutting them out of their mother with a dagger, I suppose.
Margaery's clumsy attempts at seduction were so obvious as to be laughable.
Tommen is too young for kisses, so she gives him kittens.
Cersei rather wished they were not black, though. Black cats brought ill luck, as Rhaegar's little girl had discovered in this very castle. She would have been my daughter if the Mad King had not played his cruel jape on father. It had to have been the madness that sent Aerys to refuse Lord Tywin's daughter and take his son instead, whilst marrying his own son to a feeble Dornish princess with black eyes and a flat jest. The memory of the rejection still rankled, even after all these years. Many nights she had watched Prince Rhaegar in the hall, playing his silver-stringed harp with those long, elegant fingers of his. Had any man ever been so beautiful? He was more than a man, though. His blood was the blood of old Valyria, the blood of dragons and gods. When she was just a little girl, her father had promised her that she would marry Rhaegar. She could not have been more than 6 or 7.
"Never speak of it, child,"
he had told her, smiling his secret smile that only Cersei ever saw.
"Not until his grace agrees to the betrothal. It must remain our secret for now."
And so it had, though once she had drawn a picture of herself flying behind Rhaegar on a dragon, her arms wrapped tight about his chest. When Jaime had discovered it, she told him it was Queen Alysanne and King Jaehaerys. She was 10 when she finally saw her prince in the flesh, at the tourney her lord father had thrown to welcome King Aerys to the west. Viewing stands had been raised beneath the walls of Lannisport, and the cheers of the small folk had echoed off Castle Rock like rolling thunder. They cheered father twice as loudly as they cheered the king. The queen recalled, but only half as loudly, as they cheered Prince Rhaegar. 17 and new to knighthood, Rhaegar Targaryen had worn black plate over golden ringmail when he cantered onto the lists. Long streamers of red and gold and orange silk